In today's episode, we're talking about Michael Oros, the Mad Trapper of Chesney. Not to be confused with the Mad Trapper of Rat River.
No.
This episode has gunfight.
Helicopters!
And a lot of death. Hello, everybody. My name is Kenton DeYoung, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Fairman.
Hey!
And this is Unsolved Canadian Mysteries. So, Dylan, how you been?
I am swell, Kenton. Kenton?
Are you enjoying the heat?
Yeah. No, actually... moderately, but like the other day I was getting a little annoyed by it.
Yeah.
Like it was a little pissy. I was a little pissy. But
yeah, it went from like being a very cold July to being very, very hot.
Yeah.
Why can't it just be equal?
Yeah.
You know, why can't it just be 25 all the time? Why does it be 12 some days and 36 another day, you know?
Yeah, now that I'm not a construction worker, I have no like, I'm weak. I'm become a weak person, Kenton. I can't handle it.
Well, they shouldn't be working in that temperature anyway. But
yeah, I used to do that for like 12 hours every day.
Yeah. Okay.
How are you, Kenton?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Nice.
I'm doing so good because I found out today that we have our first Patreon subscriber.
What's his name?
His name's Joshua.
Joshua. Thank you, Joshua, for being our very first Patreon subscriber.
Now, our Patreon is either $3 or $5 a month. We get either a video or an audio version. So thank you, Joshua, for donating your money and your appreciation to us.
Yeah, Joshua, the money you just donated, it's going to help with this blank wall.
We got a few messages since our last episode together.
Oh, no.
They were good. They were good
okay.
ones. They were
okay,
good
cool.
ones. This time they were good. They were good ones. We got one. Someone emailed us and told us to talk about the Mad Trapper of Rat River. And this story is...
I don't even heard of that
no?
before.
Okay. So the Mad Trapper of Rat River was invented occurred up in near Rat River. I think it was Yukon. It started off in Northwest Territories and moved over to Yukon.
Yeah.
In like the 20s.
Okay.
And I know the story pretty good.
Okay.
But I wasn't... It's come up a few times. Why don't we talk about the story? It's a famous Canadian mystery.
Okay.
And I was on the fence about it because it's like it's... The mystery is who is he?
Yeah.
Okay. But in 2019, they dug him up and did some DNA research on him, and they kind of know who he is now. Not exactly who he is, but they know some family members. So the mystery is not the mystery it used to be, but it's a pretty good one.
Oh, cool.
So I didn't want to cover it, but this story we're talking about tonight has some connections to it.
Yeah. You didn't want to cover it just like Oak Island. Yeah. All the mainstream ones. You're like, I don't like those mainstream mysteries. But cool. This one's got, it's related.
Yes.
It's a cousin or second cousin or sibling.
Oh, I'll say a cousin.
Okay.
It comes up in the story a few times.
Wow.
So a distant, or not distant, the opposite, close relation, yeah.
Can we say that we'll do the trap rapper on the Patreon?
Yes. I think we'll do this one, and then the next one of the Patreon exclusive one that Joshua's going to check out, because he's part of
it
now.
Yeah, Joshua gets to see it.
Oh, this is,
yeah. Get ready, Joshua.
We're doing it for you, buddy.
The Trap Rapper.
The Mad Trapper.
Mad Trapper.
Of Rat River, yeah.
Of Rat... Yep.
All right, so tonight's story, in homage to the Mad Trapper of Rat River, this one I'm going to call it the Mad Trapper of Chesley.
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 Nice. Okay.
It has other names, but we're going to go with that one because of its connection to it.
Okay.
This story, when I heard it, I thought it was fake. And I was like, I have to look this up. So I found... newspaper accounts. I found a lot of different sources. So
okay.
That was why we were supposed to meet a couple of days ago, and I delayed it because I wanted to do a little more research.
Yeah, we also delayed it because I was busy too.
Yes.
It's not just you. Okay.
Okay.
Don't
okay.
put it on okay. yourself.
Okay. But I was doing research, and I was trying to... The ending is the interesting, really interesting part of it. I was trying to kind of put together the ending properly. So it's a long one. Okay. So we might have to take a drink break in the middle.
Oof.
Okay.
Or during.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, Michael Oros. And his name is tricky. Think of it like Oreos.
That's Oros. Exactly the first
okay.
thing I thought, Kenton.
Okay,
it's like you're in my head.
Okay. Yeah. Michael Oros.
Okay.
Born 1952 in Oregon to a single mother. Now, you think your 50s single mother, they're not doing too good, right? Financially. But she's actually really high up. She's a university professor. She works in petroleum manufacturing. Chemical engineer. She's like all a lot of initials behind her name, right? She's very smart, very intelligent.
Accomplished.
Yeah, very accomplished, yes. Which is tough for a single mother. So because her work is such a big part of her life, Michael doesn't. Right? And Michael grows up to be a single child, and he's very shy, awkward, and this kind of sets the stage for him. Okay. So in 1968, Michael is in grade 10, living in Oregon still, and the United States has entered the Vietnam War.
Mm.
And he's 16 years old, and he knows in 2 years he's going to be sent to Vietnam because he'll be 18, right? So he's in 10th grade thinking, when I graduate high school, I'm getting shipped off to Nam, right? And he does not like this at all. He's, not only does he not want to go fight and die in Vietnam, he's also a shy guy. He doesn't want to join the military,
yeah.
Right? So he's all the trouble with this, and he does not like the government because of this. And this sets also his idea of the government going forward. And I'm not sure why the decision was made. Maybe to try and make him more friendly, to try and maybe give him a different change of scenery. His mother sends him to go live with his cousins in Wyoming, okay?
This has happened a lot of not in Canada, Kenton. I'm just saying.
It's coming up here.
Okay.
It's coming up here.
Okay. I got to keep you honest here.
I know. Which is, I was like, that doesn't start in Canada, but it ends in Canada.
That's cool.
Okay. So, I'm not sure if he actually gets to Wyoming or not.
Mm.
Some say he does, some say he doesn't. Either way, by the time he's 18, he's not going to Vietnam. He's a draft dodger. And he's just kind of floating around the United States, avoiding going to war. Right, and he gets involved in the hippie movement at the time, right? And at one point, he's down in Texas. I think it's in Taos, T-A-O-S. Someone will say I'm saying that wrong, but it's okay. Sorry. So he's down in there with living with a hippie commune. They're doing their hippie things, right? Doing drugs, listening to rock and roll.
Yeah.
Right. But their commune gets busted for drugs and violence.
Oh.
And they scatter, right? And he hates the current industrialization of America, right? In the 70s, it was really kind of, I guess this would be the 70s. It was really industrialized, right? Lots of coal plants, lots of pollution, right? And he hates it. He misses like the perfect green world, blue sky, all idea. So he goes to the one place he knows is going to be untouched by man, and that's Alaska.
With the big mosquitoes?
Yeah. Well, I guess so, yeah. So he gets up to Alaska, and he ends up in Fairbanks. And Fairbanks has a giant hippie commune as well. I didn't know that a lot of people, hippies, went up to Alaska. Everyone talks about California, but I guess a lot of them went up to Alaska because it's so remote.
Oh.
And you can just kind of live off the land and be your own person, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, right? But the problem with Fairbanks is that it's really high up north. So it's dark and cold a lot of the time.
Right.
So while he's up there, you know, he gets involved and he's reading books, he's studying Zen, he's doing drugs, he's meeting people, you know, living a good life. Except for the 7 months of the year where it's pitch black and cold, right? We can relate.
Yeah. Close, but not pitch black.
Yeah. So
how long is it just only black?
Well, I think they have like, I think it's like 6 months of black and 6 months of day, because that's above the Arctic Circle, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's quite, because when I was in Dawson City, Arctic Circle was above me.
Yeah.
And Fairbanks is above that.
Oh.
So it's pretty high up.
That's messed up.
Yeah. And he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the cold in the dark for so long.
Yeah.
So he was part of a movement called the Back to Earthers. Do you know anything about earthing or grounding?
Earthing or grounding? I'm just going to say no.
Okay. Grounding has a couple of different meanings. Yeah. Like electricity or something. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so all with earthing. So earthing is this idea that because we walk in socks and shoes on concrete or stone or wood,
don't feel the energy.
We don't touch the earth. Yeah.
I see.
So we become disconnected from the natural way of the world.
Boom.
Yeah, so he's joined this commune. They're all about earthing.
In Alaska?
Yeah, I know.
That's, it's going to go from earthing to stumping when they lose all their amenities.
So he can't handle it. He likes the idea of this, but it's too desolate up there, right? So he starts coming south. And up there, we might have learned this in school, but like we look at the map and it's like, here's the BC border, here's the Yukon border, here's the Alaska border. It's a nice and tidy, sharp.
Nice and clean.
It's not. It's a disaster up there.
Oh, gosh.
There's a whole chunk of Alaska that goes down to Canada. A whole part of Canada goes up to Alaska. It's a weird. The borders are messy up there. I have to study maps doing this, trying to figure out where exactly are we talking? Because some parts he's in northern BC, some parts he's in Yukon, some parts he's in Alaska. Mm. But it ends in Canada. So it's a Canadian mystery.
All right.
That's what I'm going with.
It's fine.
Okay. So, Oros starts traveling south, and he ends up in Chesley in northern BC.
Okay.
And Chesley is an old mining town. It's abandoned. No one's there now. But what's there is left is these old mining houses and shacks and cottages and
cool.
that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a ghost town. No one's up there. He loves it because he doesn't want to be with people, right? But he doesn't want the extreme darkness. He wants some form of, like, he's not that far from major cities if he needs to go over to Alaska or something to get to groceries or whatever, but he's alone, okay? But he's young. He's a young kid. He's at this point, I think he needs to be 20, 21, right? Because this is in 72 when he gets to Chesley. And while he's there, he meets up with Henry Vance. And Henry Vance is a local indigenous man. Him and his wife live nearby. And they see this guy wandering around this town. And they introduce themselves, and technically they're neighbors because there's nobody else up there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neighbors divided by swaths of land.
Yeah, right, yeah. So Henry Vance and his wife invite him in to feed him, to clothe him, to kind of like see who this guy is and make him feel at home, right? Because they're not going to kick the guy out. The guy isn't causing any problems, right? Later, once the story's over, people talk to Henry Vance, and he feels bad for what he did. Had he not tried to help him, a lot of people would still be alive.
Whoa!
Vance feels responsible for what happened later.
Yeah, I don't even know what's happening later. You just threw like a, like, woo, okay?
Yeah, Vance feels really bad.
So many people would still be alive. What?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so he feels really bad. So the two of them, the wife and Henry, are, you know, having one for supper once in a while, you know, get to know the guy. And they notice he has a bit of an anger problem.
Hmm.
Could have been from the drugs. Could have been from the lack of being socialized. Could be from being a shy individual growing up. Anything, right? But he has an anger problem. For example, he loves dogs, right? And he has some dogs. I don't know where he got them. I didn't really get into how he found these dogs, but he has some dogs he travels with. And his dogs were causing some kind of problem in Chesley. And Henry Vance said to him, like, something about the dogs. And they got in a fight about the dogs. And Vance said he felt like Oros was going to snap, maybe attack him or kill him or something like that, right? Another time was when he had him over for supper, they told him to go wash his hands. And again, he kind of snapped. And I think one other time, I got might have got them mixed up, but one time he threatened to go kill Henry's wife. I think that was about the dogs. So there's a few instances here where Vance family's like, okay, this guy has some problems.
Yeah, no, I'm going to kill your wife. Suspicious.
Yeah. So he doesn't, after that, they don't really associate too much, but they're still in the same area together.
Okay. Is there like one cop who's just drunk all the time that you can't tell this? He comes into town once a week to check if everything's still there?
Well, it's just like he's abandoned, so no one is up there, right?
Right. There's not a abandoned cop.
Checks out the old places.
Yeah.
So as time goes by, Michael Oreos. He stays in the area, but he kind of wanders up and to the sides. He has a big swath of land that he kind of lives in. And he rummages through houses. He gets what he wants from places because everything's abandoned, right? But there's still some cottages that are people use for summer homes, right? So he's known to break in and take stuff out of houses. Petty crime, right? But happens up north, right? But he also starts carving this symbol into trees. It's a symbol of a sun. And he tells Vance, when they're still talking, that he's declaring this as his land. This is now where no one can trespass on his property. But his property is a very large area, and it belongs to the local indigenous people. But he's, like, for being a man from Oregon, he's very well-suited for the north. He's very good at getting around, tracking, hunting. They say he can, like, go into the bush and reappear in the bush. He can go long distances. I think it's something like he can go 60 kilometers a day pulling a sled through the bush, which is incredible distance, right?
Yeah.
One of the RCMP officers in the area said that he's there longer and he grows into it. He says he's like the missing link between man and animal up there.
Oh God, that's how it all starts. He's like, this is like, it's Jason Bourne, you know?
Yeah, kind of. So he like becomes this person up north who everyone knows is out there, and they might see him in the trees or might see him doing this, but he does his own thing in the woods, right? Occasionally breaking into property to steal things. But as his territory grows, he comes in conflict with the indigenous people more and more.
Mm.
And a lot of them are just sick of this guy, and they leave the traditional land and go more into Alaska area.
Because
they have the area up there, it's like their indigenous land, but this area, fine, he can have it, right? Michael keeps these journals of his thoughts while he's up there, right? And he takes papers out of his journal and he writes on them. He sticks them on houses with a knife or on trees. And they say weird things like, I'm a free man, leave me alone. But, like, no one's bothering him.
He thinks the man's following him, but yeah. No one could give a damn.
Well, he believes there's something called torture druggers that are drugging him, torturing him, but like no one's around, right? And he believes the airplanes flying over are spraying poison down on him.
Ah.
Right, like a...
Chemtrails.
Chemtrail idea, yeah, okay. Exactly. But he also has another one that says that there are these sneak arounds that are spying on him, and he can never see them, but he knows they're there.
Wow.
Right? So what he'll do is he'll just go out tracking these sneak arounds. He'll go out for days tracking these sneak arounds to try and find them. There's nothing there, right? So this guy obviously has some problems now. Like, he's developing some hallucinations and problems like that.
How thrilling, though. Like... It's your own mind, but you're tracking, like, the government who's following yeah. you, you know? Like, he must have been just, like, intense, like, I'm on him now.
Yeah, I'm going to get these guys.
I'm going to get these guys. They're not going to sneak around me any longer.
Yeah, and he ran his journal, like, I didn't see him, but I almost saw him this time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I knew they were there because I heard this or whatever. Oh,
he's just loving it.
He's losing it. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, that too.
So, he hates authority, right? Because of the Vietnam War, because of their tracking him, right? A couple different reasons.
Yeah.
And he hates any kind of authority. The only authority up there is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And they're just doing research, monitoring fish, monitoring livestock or game, right? Not causing any problems with
him. Oh, no.
So Paul Kistner and his men are out doing their thing, right? Just reading levels and monitoring fish or whatever. And Michael Oros finds their camp and raids it. Right, takes everything he can from the camp and then sees their raft they had like tied up that they'd come over across with. He cuts the rope and the raft goes down the river and gets destroyed, right? And they know it was him, right? I'm not sure if they saw him do it or what, but they knew it was him, right? And at first they just kind of tolerated him being in the area, but now he's causing them problems, right?
Yeah,
taking their stuff, he's
vandalizing,
yes, right? He's causing some issues,
probably pooped in their campground,
probably. Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Okay. So they then go to the authorities. I'm like, hey, this guy's out there. He's vandalizing our stuff. He's taking our equipment, right? And they're like, well, we could go after him, but like, what? He's just the guy up in the woods doing his own thing. Like, we'll keep it on file, right? They don't go after him. Well, Paul and his group is up there again. So they go back to the main town and then go back up later. So Paul and his company are back up in the bush. Doing their readings, and he left his wife back in Juneau, Alaska. So, like, they're kind of on the mainland. Juneau's kind of like an island off the side. A map would be easier to understand, but they're, like, not attached to mainland. There's water between them.
There's
a bunch of water. So his wife is living in Juneau, and Paul and them are up north. And one day, while Paul's up north out of town, his wife hears a knock on the door. And she looks out the window and sees a man with long beard and long hair, kind of hippie looking, and she says, well, can I help you? And he says, there's something wrong with your newspaper, can I come in and take a look at it? And she says, no,
that's so random,
you can't come in and look at my newspaper, right? So then he starts banging on the door, he wants in the house. So he says, let me in. She goes and calls the police, right? They take a while,
no shit,
right? As normal, right? And they roll up and he's gone, right? But he left behind some semen on the window.
Kenton.
Okay.
Oh, man.
So the belief is that this was Michael Oros.
Yeah.
And he had got the name from the stuff he vandalized out of the camp and went to go visit Paul and, you know, how are these guys living?
Yeah, and came all over his windows.
Yeah, yeah. One window, yeah. So this guy's, you know, Paul did nothing wrong. He was just doing stuff for measuring fish and wildlife, right? Like, not bothering him at all. So this guy has some vendettas against people,
or he was a sneaker and this is all bullshit story.
Okay,
anyway, well, go on, Kenton.
Okay. this is where it gets Cut. Starting to get crazy. Okay.
It's already pretty crazy, Kenton. People just throwing liquids
okay
everywhere.
So the next year, this is now, I think it's 1973, a couple years into this. Okay. He lives alone up, so he lives in Chesley, but also has a place up near the lake a little ways up north into Yukon where he goes sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And the area is also quite desolate. There's not all the people who live up there. New guy comes in named Gunther Lushi. He settles kind of in the area. He likes it. He's also a bit of an introvert, right? His story is a bit more interesting, his backstory. He's not just a guy from Oregon. For the past few years, he was in a Russian POW camp.
Ooh.
Because before that, he was a soldier for Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
So he's an ex-Nazi.
Ooh.
So, you know, not well-liked by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Really can't get a job, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't have a lot of career opportunities. Right?
No, it's not a good resume.
No. So he gets up there to be alone, do his own thing, right? I mean, he also has a violent history, right? At one point, he's out trapping with some guys and sees someone messing with his lines, and he's about to shoot the guy, and the other trapper's like, you don't just shoot the other people, right?
Oh, sorry, but old habits, right?
He says, it's not the first time, or something like that. So yeah. So Gunther Lushi, you know, he's been around. And he's not too worried about this Michael Oros guy.
Yeah. Okay?
So they're kind of in the same area at one point. Some stories say that they knew each other, that they were friends.
Yeah.
Some say they met twice, right? Gunther Lushi had a picture of Oros in his cabin.
Yeah. Well, that's more than twice, then.
Well, I don't know how he took the picture. Some say they were pictured together. Some say it was just Michael. It could have been like, who's this guy? Let's take a picture of him, or let's take a selfie. I don't know. I don't know what the picture looked like, right?
I'm for sure it wasn't a selfie.
No.
Take a picture. I'm going to put this right on my wall.
So they live in different locations for a while, but then eventually, because Oros has built a little cabin up by the lake too, Lushi decides to go live up there as well.
Mm.
And he flies brings in a plane with some lumber, and he's going to build a plane or build a house, cottage. I'm sorry, he's going to build a cottage about 100 yards away from where Oros is living.
He flew lumber in with a plane?
Well, it was a plane that he hired.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they brought stuff in to build it.
That's crazy.
Lumber or whatever, materials. He told him he had about 5 weeks worth of food and stuff to build the house. And then for the plane to come back and pick him up, and then they'll get more stuff. Like a reload.
Crazy. Crazy life.
Yeah. Because up there, it's different. Right? So he flies up there. He sets up with the stuff, and the pilot leaves. And he has told him, come back in 5 weeks. Have a house built, and we can get more stuff. Right? I'm going to run out of food in 5 weeks. So the pilot comes back in 5 weeks. And he sees the house, and a pilot says it's about 2 weeks built. It's halfway done, right?
Right.
And he doesn't see Lushi anywhere.
Yeah.
Instead, he sees Oros.
Oh, no.
And he says, hey, have you seen that German guy? And Oros says, no, I haven't seen him. He says, but you guys live 100 yards apart. The only two guys up here.
Oh, no.
You haven't seen him? No.
Awkward.
And then he's like, okay, because Oros is getting a little scary, right?
Yeah,
as the years go by and he's living up here in the bush, he's getting quite intense. Pilot's like, hey, you know what? Okay, I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna take off. If you see him, let him know I was here, right? So he flies back. I think
I'm gonna take off. Sorry, that's
oh, that's pretty good.
Pretty good, Kenton.
Thanks. So he flies back and he tells RSMP, hey, there's a guy up in the bushes. I was gonna go pick up another guy, and he's missing. And another guy said he hasn't seen him, but obviously he has, right? Can you take a look at this? And for years, the RSVP have wanted to get this guy, wanted to get Michael Oros, right? Because he's causing mischief, but nothing enough to go after him.
Right.
So, like, great, we have a missing person. Let's go get him. They fly out there to go arrest him, and he's not around. So they investigate Loshi's house, what was built of it so far, mm-hmm. and they investigate Oros' house, and they find a bunch of Oros' stuff. Or Lushi's stuff in Oros' house.
Mm.
And they have the pictures of each other, and they find all the journals that he's been writing, right? But they don't find either men. So they take some of the evidence back with them, and they keep an eye out for Oros. And Oros doesn't come back all winter. He comes back in March, when things are starting to melt. And the authorities find him. They see him again. They go down, and they go arrest him. First, they ask, like, where have you been? Right? And he was out hunting the sneaker rounds for the past 5 months out in the bush in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Right? What else? Yeah.
What else would he be doing?
Right?
Yeah.
So he goes with them, with the authorities, back to Vancouver, back south into Maine, BC. And they're going to interrogate him and see what's going on with Lushi and all these things going on. But in the meantime, in the past, they've been reading his journals and everything, and they said there's nothing incriminating in these other than, they quote, say, general madness.
Right.
He's just a mad, crazy individual living up in the bush.
Just messed up.
Yeah. So, you know, they have him for psychiatric evaluation in Vancouver, and he's fine. Before he goes down, I should have said the first. Before he goes down, he tells them, you know, I'll go with you, no problem. But just make sure my dogs are taken care of. So he's down in kind of Vancouver area for a while, getting these tests done on him to see if he's capable of committing these crimes or if there's any case that he might have killed Lushi and took in his stuff, right? But he said he's never seen Lushi. He said the stuff that Lushi has had that was his. That was his stuff, not Lushi's stuff. There was no connection there. There was the picture, right? So it was kind of weird. But there wasn't anything to say that maybe Lushi just gave him some of these things too.
Right.
Right. So it was, you couldn't claim he stole these things and he killed them. There's no body. There's no, you can't verify that, right? So while he's going through this process in the courts and he's going through the psychiatric evaluation, all that, the police don't know what to do with his dogs. And they do as they do, and they destroy the dogs.
Wow. Well, that's going to just piss him off.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, what are we going to do with these dogs? Well, let's just kill them.
Yeah, right.
Problem solved.
Yeah, that's not going to anger the crazy guy.
Yeah.
Right? So he gets back, and he's upset.
Yeah.
Right. And he writes in his journal,
exact quotes.
Okay, so one of the things he says is, my revenge will be something to behold. And another was that he'll be looking forward to doing a few things I wanted to do before I died.
Mm.
Now, some of the things they found in his cabin, along with his notes, his journals, and stuff from Lushi, but also several books about the Mad Trapper or Rat River.
Mm.
He was very interested in this man.
I see.
From the 1920s, who evaded the police and lived alone in the bush and did his own thing.
I see.
Was ultimately cut down and shot by the police.
It's
not a spoiler. It's been 100 years.
Wow, Kenton. spoiler alert. Too late.
So he knows the story. He's very, right? So now he's kind of becoming this individual himself, a man alone in the bush who the police are looking after, are watching, right? Who's trapping his own kind of way, right? But now that he's been released, he's and his dogs have been killed, he kind of goes a bit further. He gets out in August of 82, and he writes this stuff in his journal, and it's quiet for a bit. But in August of 83, so the next August, in Alaska, this woman named Sydney is seen at a bar talking to a young man with long brown hair and a beard. Looks kind of skinny.
I see.
And they're having a good time, and they leave the bar together. A couple days later, I think it's August 23rd, they find Sydney in her house. She has been raped and strangled and killed. But this happened in Alaska, and this was before 9/11, so there wasn't a lot of cross-border communication between the authorities.
Right.
So there was a lot of thought that had killed Cindy, but there's no way to really collaborate the two stories, right? Because authorities weren't working together then, they didn't have the evidence then, so Cindy's case, murder, is still unsolved to this day.
Hmm.
Right? Even though it happened quite a while ago. I'm sure there's some people who have really looked into it, but everyone kind of agrees it was Michael Oros, but this is no way to prove it.
Right.
A couple years go past. It's now March of 1985. The Hayes family is coming back up because March, spring thaw, they're coming up for their summer home,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
And they find their place has been vandalized. About $7,000 worth of damage.
And a bunch of semen.
Well, you're close. In exchange for the things that Michael Oros took from this place, including wedding rings. I don't know why I kept them up there over winter, but whatever. In exchange of that, he brought in a moose and killed it in his, well, he was already dead, but dismantled it in their living room with blood all over the walls, all over the floor, complete disaster, big bloody mess.
Hmm, but what would you rather have? I'd still take the moose.
Okay. Okay. So,
I say that's an upgrade.
Okay, great. So they go back to the, I think they took a skidoo or something back to the main city and said, hey, this guy's up to something. We think it was this Michael Oros guy who has a bit of a name now, a reputation. He's been up here now for 15 so years, right? Doing this kind of stuff. So can you come and take a look at him? Right, so they send out a helicopter to go and find this guy, and they see Michael with his sled going across the snow, right? And Michael hates planes.
He's such a kook.
Because he thinks they're spraying chemicals, right?
Yeah.
So what he does, and he's known to do this, he shoots at them.
Oh my God.
So he shoots at this helicopter, and suddenly he's shooting at authority. Shooting at the police.
Yeah.
Right? He misses, right? Obviously.
Yeah. Well, what is he shooting at him with? Probably like a .22.
A rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah. He misses, right? Obviously. But now he's shooting at police. They get back to mainland and they contact the RCMP and they get the emergency response team, which is like the high league RCMP officers who do the really dangerous stuff. Like things like SWAT.
Yeah.
But RCMP.
Yeah. SWAT on horses.
Yeah. Well, in this case, helicopters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the ERT is assembled. They're going to go after Michael Oros. And in the ERT is Mike Buddy and Gary Rogers.
Ooh. So wait, his name's Mike Buddy.
It's Boudet. It's B-U-D-A-Y.
Boudet.
Boudet. Fancy.
Mike Boudet.
Yeah. So they're in one group. This is the second group. So they send the helicopters up that the next morning. It was like they came back from being shot at. They called in the ERT. The ERT arrived that night to set up and leave the next morning. So that night, Michael Oroz has a sled and he gets to an island and he stops. Things are still kind of frozen, right? So he can go across the water. Stops an island, sets up camp and falls asleep. While he's sleeping, some local indigenous people notice him. And the next morning, an elder from the group goes to the police, the same station where the ERT is heading out of. And this elder comes in and see, a lot of people feel like Michael Oroz isn't a human anymore. He's devolved into a beast-like individual, the missing link kind of thing. And the fact he can go through the woods so quietly, he can drag a sled so far, he can do these things that most people can't do. The local indigenous people believe he's infected with like a spirit called the Kashtaka.
Kashtaka.
And a Kashtaka is like a spirit where someone is drawn into the wilderness and they become wild and erratic, violent, lose their humanity and become like an animal in the woods.
Whoa.
Similar to what's
the
going
Wendigo.
On. Similar to the Wendigo. Yeah, very similar to the Wendigo. But Wendigo, of course, we talk over that in another episode.
Yeah.
Some say it's spirit, some say it's a physical being. This is a spirit that takes over a physical being that can then go into others and attack other people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very evil entity. And he happened to sleep on the Big Island in this area. It's called the Big Island. And the Big Island was home to the resting place of a shaman. And his presence on the island that night, the elder said, woke and angered the shaman.
Whoa. So the shaman's dead?
Yeah.
And
the shaman is going to take out this Kashtaka
for
what he did. And the elder says he's going to, this Michael Oroz is going to be dead by noon. This elder, this shaman is not messing around. And he knows, they know that the ERT is heading that way right now. Whatever is going to happen with Michael Oroz and the shaman, they're going to be right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the ERT is flying in, right? And they see Michael Oroz in the bush. And what they're going to do is they're going to drop out two of them, Buddy and Rogers, on one side of him.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be in front, and the other group's going to be behind.
Yeah.
And they're going to circle him. Not a spoiler, but they did the same thing they did to the Mad Trapper Rat River. They encircled him on both sides.
See, if you say it's not a spoiler, it doesn't make it not a spoiler, Kenton.
Okay. Well,
this is not a spoiler, but this is how the next thing ends.
So, the next, no, the mystery is more who he is, not how he goes.
Okay, Kenton.
Okay. But be sure to tune into that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
So the ERT drops to some of them in front of him, some of them behind him, right? And Oroz has seen this before because he's studied the Mad Trapper. He knows what they're going to do. The surround, shoot, kill, annihilate system, right? So Mike Oroz sees the two officers.
Yeah.
And the officers see him. Then he kind of disappears out of view, I think behind a tree or a bulge in the ground, the snow or stuff, right? And they lose sight of him. So they have him on both sides, right? Surrounding him. And he does what Michael Oroz does the best. He finds some way very quickly to go around them. And while they're still kind of waiting to see where he's going to come out from, you hear a gunshot behind them. Boudet's been shot, killed, like that.
What?
So Rogers turns with his rifle and sees Michael Oroz. They say about 40 meters away.
Yeah.
40 yards away, right? He has his gun. Rogers has his gun. Rogers has to, like, you know, what do you shoot? You have to, like, repump or whatever, shotgun, however a rifle works, right?
Yeah.
So there's going to be a pause. And this is where the mystery of tonight comes in.
Oh, dear.
What happens next?
Okay.
Okay, so one story goes with Vernon Froelich. He was an officer who got the journals of Michael Oroz and read them and kind of made his own story about it. It's called, like, The Descent into Madness or something like that, talking about the killer. And he says what happens. He says that Oroz's gun jammed. It didn't fire. And instead, Rogers fires his gun, kills him, hits him in the forehead, boom, dead.
Cool.
The other story is from Rogers firing the gun.
Oh.
He said something else happened that day.
Well, then why are we even looking at the other thing? Anyway.
Well, the two of them, so Vernon put out a book, right?
Yeah.
And there's a review from Rogers saying this book is 99% accurate except for the one part that he thinks Vernon took out so wouldn't discredit the whole story.
Okay.
There's a bit of a rivalry there between two parties, but what happened? So, because Rogers is the guy who fired the gun. He was right there,
yeah.
Right? So he knows what happened.
Right.
But here's what Rogers says happened. He says he saw Oroz with the gun. He had his gun. And then a moment later, he had an out-of-body experience where he was above the two men floating in the sky, saw the two of them, saw Oroz fire the gun, pull the trigger, the clip hit the bullet. The bullet just didn't go out of the gun. Instead, Roger shot his gun with extreme accuracy from that distance right into the forehead and killed him. And then like that, he was back in his body. And he believes that was the shaman stepping in.
Took over.
Took over the body, took over the scene, stopped the gun, fired the gun to kill the Kashtaka right there and then.
Whoa!
And Roger swears this is what happened. And he did not know that the shaman was coming. Because right. they were already, ERT was already on their way, right?
Right. Oh, so he, wait a minute. Right. Oh, so this is a separate thing that's happening, not attached at all to the ER.
ERT.
Like
the ERT.
They were going there.
They were already gone.
Yeah. Okay, so there's no possible way. Interesting.
And they say that the elder came in and told the RCMP, and the RCMP was like, thanks for coming in. Like, you walk home safe now, okay? Like, they totally dismissed his claim.
Yeah.
And he said he's going to be dead by 12. He was dead at 1 p.m. They were, it was an hour. Like, that was pretty accurate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the division between the two stories of the two men, the author who wrote the one book and the police officer who shot the gun.
Right.
About what happened.
99% true.
Yeah.
Accurate.
So what do you think happened that day?
Whoa. Well, that's interesting. So I guess the question is, when did he say this? Like, when did he say he had that? Like, not when did it happen? Like, when did he physically say it out of his mouth to someone that this happened?
That's a good point.
If it was before that, then sure, that's crazy. That's, you know, possible. But did he? Because obviously, if you're about to shoot someone and they're pointing a gun at you, there's a lot of stuff that can happen with your mental chemistry.
Yep.
And literally there are, I don't know what they're called, but there are literally mental disorders where you see yourself in third person.
Yes. Yeah.
So like just that alone makes it totally possible for him to, you know, visually see that, especially when your body and mind is going through an extremely stressful situation. Your partner just died.
Yep.
So if he said it before, like if he said it before they, like when they got on the helicopter, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if he said it right before, like they landed, like no other interactions, that's believable, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. You're right. What point does he tell that story? If he says it then and there on the field when you just shot him, or says it when they already get back to base camp and they find out the other came in. He's like, well, before I shot him, this thing happened. That's a good point.
Could be like Martinsville Horror kind of stuff, you know, like suggestion makes reality in your mind.
Yes, exactly. That's a great example. Yeah. I forgot. So afterwards, I didn't mention it, but afterwards, years later, they're still looking for Lushy, right?
Yeah.
And they do find him.
Oh, really?
He's been killed.
Obviously.
Shot, wrapped in plastic, and buried on the property.
What's the point of wrapping in plastic? it's just a waste of plastic.
I know, but so he did kill, Lushy, probably Cindy. He went after Paul Kistner's wife.
Yeah.
He killed one officer, and now he's dead.
Right.
And Vance has all that on him, right? He feels responsible for all that. But
I guess,
how do you know someone's going to go that far?
Right.
So I don't want to not include that part because it goes back to Henry Vance. Going back to the event that occurred, the deviation. Yeah, I don't know what to believe because you can believe, sure, that some kind of shaman spirit stepped in and took out an evil entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Or it could be a mental thing. Like you had that third-person perspective.
Yeah.
Maybe hyper-focused. You knew what you had to do.
Adrenaline dump.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, one author believes did not happen like that, did not include it in his book, and Rogers included it in his series and says that that's the important part of the story, right?
Right.
That a shaman stepped in and closed it. I had not thought about that. We mentioned, what point does he tell the story,
right?
Because that would say if it's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an answer to that, so now I don't know what to believe.
Right.
I was leaning towards the shaman idea.
Right.
Because like that sounds amazing.
Right.
But that is an excellent point. I don't know now. I'm sorry.
Hey.
I don't have it. No bear this time.
Looks like unsolved. Wait, hold on.
Oh, no.
Hold on. Unless he was actually killed by a bear and they'd know. No, there's no bear.
Okay.
It's fine. I get it. But there, little fact about Alaska, lots of bears.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And Northwest Territories and Yukon.
Yeah.
Bears.
BC. Northern BC. Yeah.
Bears.
There's probably bears in the area. heard it.
Oh, there's probably bears that watched it happen.
They would know. If only we could interview the bears.
Hey, and we can't.
No. So what do you think of that story?
I think it was great. That was dope.
It was a wild one.
That's top five for sure so far. That's a good story.
Thank you.
For not being a well-known story, or at least to me, not well-known.
No, and like, I was researching it. There was a newspaper article that came out about the officer being killed and this guy being shot down, the Michael Oros. Another one with Oros when he went to Vancouver to get assessed. There's the book.
It's documented, but
Yeah, but not a lot, right? That's why I called it the Mat Trapper of Chesney, because it's related to the Mat Trapper River and the guy's his own story in the Chesney area. But other people call it other names.
Yeah, maybe we should be like, you know, doing TV shows about lots of different mysteries, not just Oak Island.
It could be a movie.
That would be a good movie idea. Yep.
So that's the tonight's story. It's wild. It's a long one.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kenton.
Thank you, Dylan, for sitting down and listening to this long story.
It was good.
And thank you, listener, for listening to this long story as well, or watcher, viewer. And thank you to Joshua.
Yeah, Joshua.
For subscribing to our
Patreon. Did you think that was going to happen, Joshua? I didn't.
And Joshua and anyone else can now hear about the Mat Trapper River in the next one, Patreon exclusive. So if you enjoyed this one, the teases for the next one, you'll like that one too.
Hop on over.
Yep, $5 or $3 a month. Thank you again, Dylan. Thank you for listening, everybody. As always, my name is Kenton DeYoung. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Fairman. And this has been Unsolved Canadian Mysteries.